First Church in Jamaica Plain Unitarian Universalist, 6 Elliott Street, just off Center Street near the monument. Next Wednesday, a forum on the Cuban Five. Learn about the history of political relations between Cuba and the United States, and the music ended. Let's have some more here. Ooh, I really like this too. All right. Learn about the history of the Cuban Five, the relations between Cuba and the United States, and the five Cuban intelligence officers who've been incarcerated in the United States since 1998 on trumped-up charges of espionage and conspiracy to commit murder. A worldwide campaign is now protesting their unjust imprisonment. That's next Wednesday, April 27th. From 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at Boston College, Fulton 115, sponsored by the July 26th Coalition. For more information, visit july26.org. And next Friday evening, an international gala for Haiti at First Parish Church in Harvard Square, featuring diverse artists, live music, food and dancing, raffles, silent auction, singing, and poetry. The gala will support the Haitian Coalition of Somerville and its upcoming trip to Haiti to build a school for 250 orphans. Co-sponsored by the Arlington Street Church Social Action Committee and First Parish Church, Cambridge. That's next Friday from 6 to 10 p.m. at First Parish Church, located at 3 Church Street in Harvard Square. For more information, visit Haitian-Coalition.org. And May Day's coming up next Sunday. Commemorate International Workers' Day with a rally at noon next Sunday, May 1st, at the Rose Kennedy Greenway, across from the Haymarket T Station, on the corner of Cross and Hanover Streets, just there on the edge of the North End. After the rally, people will take the T to East Boston to join in the East Boston March to the May Day Rally, which takes place in Chelsea. The rally calls for an end to the attacks on workers, stop the detention and deportation of migrant workers and their families, money for jobs and education, not for war and occupation, and featuring a special performance by Bread and Puppet. They are on the Rose Kennedy Greenway starting at noon next Sunday, May 1st. This is sponsored by the Boston May Day Committee, which includes Mass Global Action, the Answer Coalition, Socialist Workers' Party, Socialist Alternative, Socialist Party, July 26th Coalition, Text Change, and Latinos for Social Change. And it's endorsed by many other groups. For more info, please visit bostonmayday.org. And that is all we have time for. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. Thank you for being part of what's left. I'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Music for Humans coming up as soon as humanly possible. You're listening to WMBR Cambridge.
مرحبا. Yes, مرحبا. I say to you, I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran, and it's time to flow. To flow through the outer regions of belief. Sitting here with me, prepared to flow, to drift, is Zorro. Zorro, mahaban.
Thank you for having me on the show again, Doctor. It is a pleasure. And thank you, of course, to all the listeners out there as well. This is quite a flow, I must say. It is a rhythm of life, I think. Can you feel it, Doctor?
Slowing.
I think it is increasing, actually. But perhaps it is a matter of opinion, I'm not sure. Perhaps I can hear the slowing. It is certainly drifting in the manner that you say.
Just when I'm holding a thought, another thought emerges from beneath it.
It is so difficult, this obfuscation of the self that comes from these things where you are to think of one idea and to consider, but you are interrupted by your own dialogue. Can be quite frustrating, I think, but perhaps that is what makes us essentially human.
I recently found myself consuming a cream-filled Italian pastry covered in pistachio. The flavor was unexpected.
I'm very sorry.
It was wonderful.
It is good.
It was a cannoli and filled with cream, and just as it seemed, the more I desired the cannoli, the more I squeezed it, the more its juice and cream ran over my hand and onto the ground.
The creamier it was.
And I lost so much of it. It is such a basic lesson. But after the first bite, I released myself from the strictures of society. I ate it with complete abandon, and it was this lack of wisdom that led to my eating much less of the cannoli than I would have liked.
And I think this is a bit of a quintessential problem, I think, with the human experience, this tension, if you like, between that which we want and that which we can have. For the more that you want something, the more likely you are to push it by accident away from you.
It's like Mama and her sweet corn. Let's bring a caller in to join with us. If anyone would like to call, it is 617-253-8810, and we have two lines available. Caller 1, marhaban.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Thank you, caller, for this.
That was
brief but meaningful.
Very
message.
Satisfying, I think.
It was.
And perhaps I would not say that it was brief, but I think concise is the word. But it is an insight of itself. I think it is to say one philosophy that you may have is if you desire the cannoli or some object, you should try to take it, even if these pursuits, they are difficult.
Yes. It is sometimes not the lack of desire that is important, but the presence of restraint in that desire, in acting out the desire. Because desire also can cloud the judgment, it is important that desire not be absent, but it be in its place in the mind.
Yes, I think I can agree. There are some philosophical tenets, some positions which say that a man is most at peace when he has no desires. But I think that it is more accurate in my point of view to say that a man is most at peace when he does not desire to change his desires.
I can see some truth there.
Yes, this, I think, is some kind of equilibrium.
It's a challenge for any seeker of truth. A person who, I think, is well balanced in life, wishes to see the world as it is. But we are all finite. We are all limited in our view of things. And we often do not see things as they are. And I think partially it is our desires, sometimes denial, which colors the view that we have of the world.
I think that perhaps this is one point of view, but there is another, which is to say that the world does not exist beyond that which we know. You cannot have an experience which you cannot have, and so there is not a world outside of experience.
I think that if we are ignorant of the remainder of existence, it can be difficult because nothing we see can possibly make sense on its own without digging.
So you find necessary the inference of that which we are blind to.
I'm not sure that without additional knowledge, it is possible to make sense of the world. At least the passive mind will never make sense of the world that it sees. It's so small.
So this additional knowledge which we must have, you think, is it something that we must search, that we must find, or that we must... Yes, I think that we must have endowed to us to be gifted.
It is a gift. From whom?
So you believe that it must be a gift, but you are not sure from which source it comes?
I think it is a gift that one must give oneself.
Ah, so it is an article of faith, you may say?
No, not even of faith. Simply a requirement that a person spends a significant amount of time and effort in sincere self-reflection to learn and to be willing to learn. Part of this, I think, is putting apart the desires, putting them aside for the period of learning.
I think this is some tenet that I may agree with. The tendency for self-reflection and learning of the inner psyche. You're lost, you say.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you are searching?
What is the avenue by which truth may be known?
Perhaps there is some outside insight.
You have any insight? 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hey.
Welcome.
So I realized fairly frequently on Friday nights at around 6:30, 6:45, nearing 7 o'clock, I had the desire for cookies. Homemade cookies of varying ingredients, usually
yes.
Barley malt or brown rice syrup or
yes, caller.
Oats and things like that. And I was thinking, not until tonight did I realize that I had a desire for these cookies. It was an unconscious desire. So, in a sense, I had a desire for a desire, but I wasn't desiring desire consciously.
Not a general desire for desire, but, and if I may, caller, expand on what you are saying, a desire to be filled, to have the emptiness filled.
Yeah, a very sharp desire. Which, of course, afterwards then, after eating 6 or 7 or 8 cookies, which have substituted my dinner by that point, of course, in hindsight, it's the opposite of the desire.
All things in hindsight are more clear, I think. Tell me, caller, I have a question for you. These cookies, do they contain molasses?
No, not molasses. Usually, brown rice syrup, which is sort of like molasses, but not from brown sugar, no. But a gooey-like viscous substance, yes.
And you overate, caller?
I tend to, usually. I mean, they're in the oven right now.
But I think
you have not yet overeaten.
There is another point of view, which is to say it is underappreciated if you become full and regret it.
there's part guilt there, but of course that goes along with the fulfillment of a desire, and the fulfillment of a desire oftentimes tends not to be very favorable, and
I think
very similar to guilt.
It sounds to me, Galer, that it is not the desire to eat which you are fulfilling. I think it is the desire to want to eat. That is that which you really desire is to have more desire.
Yeah, there's a line in a poem by John Berryman talking about wanting to have eaten, not wanting to eat necessarily, but wanting to have eaten, wanting to be full, either maybe not wanting to prepare it or not wanting to have to deal with chewing it. Not having to equate that desire with a conscious impulse or whatever it is, but maybe that's something that's going on partly.
I love this view because, you know, I think there are often undesirable situations, difficult to understand for eating, but for giving birth, I want to have given birth, but the idea of a large person being emitted from me, or I would like to go to the bathroom, but I know that I have eaten a lot of pepper.
I think I understand that this is a situation where we desire the hindsight, and as said, the hindsight on the situation is more clear, more accurate, or it may not be more accurate, but it seems to be so. So I think that this explains some of the longing to have done some process without actually to do it, which is to say that when you are engaging in an activity, you are not necessarily pleased with it, but it is partially because you are not understanding completely. When you are done, you may look backwards and find more clarity.
I think often we want things, and then once we obtain them or achieve them, we are either filled with disbelief that we have achieved these things or accomplished these things, or we realize they were not what we originally desired.
It's interesting to think that, I mean, the way that we're talking about desire right now is sort of like this geometric ray emanating from us, you know? It's like object of desire and desirer, and it's interesting to think of it maybe the other way, as, you know, all the objects and longings in the world pointing towards us.
And this duality also exists in our language. We say that an object is desired. We say that it is attractive. It is desirable.
Yeah, object of desire.
Yet it is so common to say, I want this thing, and more common to say, this thing repulses me, than to say, I am repulsed. This disgusts me.
That is an interesting insight, that the negative attraction is more associated with the object. It's a more objective kind of point of view, whereas the attraction we recognize inherently to be more the subjective opinion, sort of perception.
Belongs to me that I want the cannoli. Fortunately, I have a large beard, so at least some of the cream is saved.
Yeah.
But when I find a beard hair in the cannoli, it is a terrible thing.
That's another story, huh?
When I find the cannoli in my beard hair, it is a wonderful thing.
There's a Roald Dahl story about an old couple, and the older man gets food in his beard all the time. Mm. And it's supposed to gross out little kids, but when I was a little kid, I think that served as the biggest incentive to grow a beard once I got to beard growing age.
And yet, as a kid, you are not of the age which is, this is possible. It is most frustrating, I imagine.
Right. I mean, just learning about just world hunger and knowing all the food that could be saved simply by growing a beard.
Yes, I think that you may say that the beard is green in this sense.
Well, food waste is an incredible, incredible thing. I think that if we were all forced to eat the food that we purchased, the world might be a better place.
Or perhaps if we were all forced to purchase the food which we eat.
Mm-hmm. And I think even world hunger, it's such a broad thing. Because...
See,
even here,
that's
in
interesting, because I think of it more as tall than broad.
More of
that is, it is dimension is vertical.
No, absolutely. But so many hungry people live in here in Boston. We do not need to go to. We do not need to go to Africa to find hungry.
There's a loud sound at my apartment door. I think someone is buzzing in, possibly someone who's looking for food. No, it's just the UPS man. Just trying for these packages here.
Absolutely. I think we're all looking for something. We're all hoping our package will come.
Unfortunately, it's not a package for me, but for my roommate. This happens quite frequently.
But it's a package which
maybe the next one, maybe the next one,
maybe the next one.
It's very very positive look.
Michael, sorry, go ahead.
It's a very positive outlook that the messenger has brought you along with the package for the roommate. And caller, why is it necessary particularly to give the roommate the package?
I guess simply because her name is on it. And I would hope that if she received a package for me that I would eventually get it.
So it is a principle of symmetry in some respect. I think that I like this very much.
And yet, caller and Zorro, the truth is that she has not received a package for you, caller. You have her package, it is there, and thus the symmetry has broken.
Right, I guess it sort of hinges on the hypothetical, if I ever do receive a package while living at this residence.
Perhaps in the interest of some sort of reciprocal relationship, you should become ordering some packages.
Look, caller, even if she were to have opened your package, suppose, would you now open her package?
I don't know if I'd feel right doing that, nor would I really have any desire to, usually because most of the packages are things like big 5-pound bags of coffee, and I'm not a coffee drinker.
But see, the point is that a person, it is not justified to do bad things to a person because one believes that they are bad. So likewise, you opening her package now should not influence her in the future to seek retribution against you.
Yeah, I guess that just goes in line with sort of a gut feeling, and I guess whatever my personal ethics are based on. But
yes,
it seems really pious to say something like that, because really it probably has nothing to do with ethics. It's pretty much a cause and effect relationship. Every time I've received a package, it's been full of coffee, or it's been a food processor, or a crock pot, or blender. I don't use many of these things, so it's, I think, a bit more practical than that. It might be different. I might even open someone else's package if, you know, the package that I have received, I've seen that they've been full of things that I might be interested in.
So
valuable items.
We have two options. There is the route of apathy and altruism, and you are not sure which you are taking.
Why don't we bring in... Let's bring in a second call to join the discussion. It's 617-253-8810. Or not. In any case, caller, is there any indication of what the package would contain now?
Well... it's fairly heavy. When I shake it, it's definitely not Legos, for I've shaken many packages under many a Christmas tree, and I'm familiar with the sound of Legos in the box. I think it might be either sand, maybe sand art, or coffee.
Sand art.
You know, the Technicolor. I don't know if you guys know about this. This is more something that was popular when I was in junior high, and mostly among junior high school-aged students. Colored sand that you sort of crafted in this, you know, poured into a certain glass container, usually shaped like a unicorn or a seashell or something, and you got to sort of choose the colors and layer
and,
this rainbow of sand.
If you don't mind me to ask, which shape was your favorite?
You know, I never had one. Just friends had them, but I just get this big image of a big unicorn, which I think is actually the cover of a Lisa Frank notebook.
I think I understand this. It is a unicorn of many colors. It is a Technicolor unicorn.
Let's bring in that second caller now. Tell us about their unicorn. Caller 2, marhaban. Caller, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome, caller. Yes.
Well, thank you.
Yes, no.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, caller, for calling.
I hope I didn't bump the caller ahead of me.
No, he was on. He's still there. He's with us.
Sure am. We're having a conference call.
I think it is a multi-person dialogue.
It is. Yes. Caller, tell us about this. Have you ever received a package that was meant for another person?
And if so, what did you do with it?
Well, I tend to just accumulate any packages that come my way. That's kind of the way I...
You are an endpoint of packages. Package will come and it will not depart.
Well, yes, if, you know, if somebody places a package in my hand, I figure, well, you know, it was meant for me, and I accumulate them.
Caller, do you happen to be a mailman?
No, I've received packages from mailmen, and, UPS and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I like to hold on to them. I think that's the best way, because...
You have met enough mailmen to be sure that you are not one. This is correct?
No, I'm not a mailman. I could never do that job.
But caller, and has ever anyone taken a package from you? Because then maybe it is not such a bad... I'm not sure. Caller 1, what is your opinion? Would your roommate sooner or later come and collect the package?
I think she may, although she you might not need the contents of the package, considering our freezer is currently filled with an uncountable number of coffee
unicorn
bags.
Mm-hmm. I propose the following experiment, hypothetically. Caller, take the package, place it among your belongings, and if she does not claim it within 2 weeks, consume it.
Right, yeah. I guess this goes back to the question of if we were all forced to consume what we purchase. In this sense, I suppose I could... You can consider that I maybe purchased this since it sort of fell into my hands.
And there was the process where you signed for the package. It is yours now, no?
Yeah, and... maybe, yeah, in some ways, I suppose so. I'm not sure where that signature goes. Probably just as a delivery confirmation that it was received at this address, but I suppose, yeah, I have I own some part of this package now. If it weren't for me, this package would not have been delivered.
And so I think since we come to a conclusion that there is a link between responsibility and ownership.
Wow, that music is incredible.
Are you opening these packages?
Wow. No, I gotta say though, I went to this Indian restaurant in the East Village in New York City a couple weeks ago, and there was a sitar and a tabla player, and I went to this particular restaurant because I had heard the sitar from the street, and it's on a street on this block in the village where there's all these people outside trying to get you to come to their restaurant, and of course you feel kind of like a dork going in once somebody invites you in this really overly solicitous way. Anyway, I got wooed in by this sitar player, and I got a table with my friend right next to him, and he played not really ragas or any traditional Indian music, but just sort of like soloing over a drone or whatever. And I noticed that no one else in the restaurant seemed to care at all, or even notice that there was a sitar player, let alone, you know, clap after the songs or maybe look in his general direction.
That's interesting. I wonder, though, if it is possible that you are so consumed by his presence that you are unable to notice that which may have been actually there.
Yeah, I mean, either that or maybe it's possible that everyone else in the restaurant had been a good friend of the sitar or tabla players, or maybe had been there for the past 2 years every night, and were frankly sick of the music, and maybe there's a petition being passed around in the back of the restaurant.
Is not really the suggestion. I mean, perhaps that he will finish and you will clap so loudly and smile so much that you will not see the reactions that the other people have.
I love this point, though, the caller makes. The idea that we miss so many things. It is known because we see others in our situation, not smarter than us, missing things.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I suppose, according to my personal filter and maybe music education and, you know, my liking of certain styles of music, I'd be more receptive or more perceptive to that sort of thing. However, maybe on the train ride, the person next to me whose headphones are incredibly loud and I could overhear lyrics of obscenities or whatnot, I instantly, you know, my filter turns that sort of thing off, and he probably has the same sort of reaction. Sitting alone on the train thinking, I'm the only one that appreciates this music, and I wonder why everyone else is asking me to turn out my headphones.
And did you actually ask him?
The man on the train?
Yes, yes. I'm wondering if there is some communication directly between, or if perhaps that this is all an assumption on your part.
Right, yeah, it's assumptions on both sides. Of course,
absolutely.
It's tremendously awkward to ask somebody if they're properly, you know, appreciating.
Yes, and at the same time, it obscures the truth for us not to seek it more directly.
No, I definitely have... I share the experience the caller mentions. I have encountered a situation where I was in a very, very prolonged train ride, and everyone is reading or has headphones listening, and some headphones are so loud that even I, Dr. Jalis Sakran, with my diminishing hearing, can clearly perceive the lyrics,
right,
of the singer, the suggestive content, and I respond, I think, in a way that has successfully delivered my feelings toward the listener, which is simply to begin to move suggestively and to mouth the lyrics myself towards the listener.
Suggestively, as if to say, I wish to be part of your world, or something like this?
Simply to admit that I have become part of the listener's world,
so
unintentionally.
The suggestion of inclusion.
This sort of situation is fraught with complexities.
Simply.
Because, of course.
No, please, caller.
I mean, I'm sure that someone that listens to music at such a high level of volume has had situations in the past where people would tap their head along or do some sort of thing like that in a mocking manner.
No, yeah. Absolutely. This is intended to mock, or to at least to communicate to the listener simply that the volume is too high. For no one I have met so far has been encouraged by the presence of a portly, elderly Arab singing their music and dancing suggestively in public. It's always resulted properly in the end.
Yeah, that's
so
a vivid image.
When you do this effect, when you are to suggest to them to say, you are making me part of your world and it is not appreciated, it has always been successful.
Indeed. Why don't we bring another person into our world? 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. You guys were talking about packages earlier, And I just wanted to say that my girlfriend has a very important package that should be arriving soon.
And you would like us to pray for its safe arrival?
Yes, that would be nice. Especially since this package is our child.
That is interesting. The metaphor between the package which is brought by the postman and the child,
which is brought
by perhaps some god or something,
or by nature simply.
Our package will be arriving via stork.
This is a beautiful metaphor, caller, and congratulations. Is it your first package?
This will be our second package, actually.
That's wonderful. And caller, I wonder your wife. And she's about to deliver this package. As we were speaking earlier, I'm not sure if you were listening, about wanting to have eaten, the desire to have delivered. Is she afraid of the process itself, of the stork transmitting the package?
Well, we're mostly afraid that the stork might drop the package in flight, or upon delivery, when we're taking the package from the stork, that we might drop it.
I can see the reason for the fear. It is quite alarming to me, for me to consider this thing as well.
I'm not sure the source of the fear, actually. Zoro, caller, did you drop the first package?
Well, the first package was delivered to us in a lake, so There was no fear of dropping it, but the transaction was quite smooth.
Hmm. And so why not also deliver the second package underwater?
Well, we no longer live in the lake. We live in the city now.
I see. Well, caller, all I can tell you is, you know, storks are constantly delivering packages to various people. I think it is a frightening metaphor, but itself, you know, it happens. And I think be more excited than afraid.
Thank you.
I think we lost our earlier caller.
But
no, second caller. No? Hello? We lost both of our callers with the same accident, unfortunately. Well, if anyone would like to call, I will try very hard not to hang the phone on you. It is 617-253-8810.
Yes, I think that a man to be hung by the telephone, it is the worst way to be hung.
It's not a great thing.
And there is this aspect that in a normal hanging, you will not be too close with another person. But if there is a telephone involved, there are perhaps several people. It is not sure how many that may be... very, very close to you.
No, absolutely. Let's see which of our callers has returned. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
Thank you.
A brand new caller.
Well, what you've been talking about has gotten me thinking about desires and closeness of... groups versus perhaps, you know, one-on-one connection.
Or a connection with oneself.
Yes. And in that connection, maybe lies the depth of other connections.
Yeah, absolutely, caller. I think I really like this image. I think people often imagine connecting, but... I think even when one is connecting alone internally with oneself, there is a hum, a resonant frequency that the earth shares.
Yes, I think I understand there is this connection you asked to say with the universe. It is not a connection to yourself, but a connection to all things at the same amount.
Absolutely.
And yourself as one of all things.
Both one of and also simply, in a way, all things also.
Hmm.
There is a duality there.
Which way?
Well, in the sense that when one connects with a specific other person, it is easy to be lost in that person. But within each of us, within ourselves... especially the most familiar aspects of ourselves, we will find similarities and a connection to other people. Let's bring in a second voice to connect and expand the connection. Caller 8, marhaban.
Hi, thanks.
Welcome back, caller.
Thank you. So the previous caller was talking about making a connection, finding connections, and I just wanted to call and say that I've also been trying to find a connection in my life.
Yes. And she is still here with us. You have connected.
What was that?
If you wish to connect, the caller is still on the line.
Oh, I've already made the connection.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it is pleasant to have this nice four-way connection.
Mm.
And how do you connect to other people? How do you find other people to connect to otherwise? other than New Age talk shows?
Well, normally I just go to the bar, I'll go to a concert, I'll just be walking down the street. In fact, just the other day I was walking down the street and I made a connection with a man in my neighborhood.
These methods, they are perhaps very modern, but I think they are popular because they are quite effective.
Yep, definitely effective.
I never do this, you know. I find that simply being around other people exposes connections. Simply being there, being present.
Sometimes I just go to the bar and I just sit there and nobody wants to make a connection with me, so I'll just sit there by myself. But my presence is still at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps I may ask the other caller, what is it that you do to connect with other people?
Well, I was thinking a lot about that as you asked the other caller, and that's part of my question, I suppose. I feel a disconnect from other people. And I wonder if that is a disconnection from myself.
You know, I think it is possible to interpret it along this method. It is quite difficult, I think. There is a balance that we must walk between if we are to focus internally or externally to achieve our goals. And it is not unreasonable to see that it is hard. It is very difficult. This is one of the things that we all face, I think. And that is to say, should I focus on the others or should I focus on myself? And
which others to focus on?
Yes, I think that this question, it can only be answered by practice. I do not think that there are any words which may give the answer,
Let me say this, though, Zorro. I think sometimes it is important to be able to connect readily with oneself, because if there is a block there, which can happen for many reasons, from youth, from a distraction, a damage, anger.
And but also from old age and from being too narrow-sighted.
Absolutely. From things that it may be difficult to, even when one is connecting with a new person, to be focused enough on that person to not be distracted.
But I think that the problem is that, as well as the connection with oneself, if you focus too much upon your own self-connection, it may become difficult to relate to the others in your life, and that we want to maximize the connection we have with all people, including ourselves, but including the others as well.
Mm.
So there is a balance. Which should I focus on?
I would like to propose to the other caller, since she was saying that she feels alienated, if maybe perhaps she would like to connect with me.
Sure.
Does that,
aren't we connecting right now?
Well, I was thinking more in a actual physical connection.
Well, I don't particularly like bars.
Well, a walk in the park, go to the beach, any of those things could be a connection.
And what are you looking for in a connection?
Well, just someone to, you know, hang out with, watch movies, go for walks with. Maybe perhaps our dogs could make a connection.
That is, of course, assuming that there are two dogs or perhaps more in question.
Yes, there's not two dogs.
You don't have two dogs?
I don't have one dog.
Oh, me neither.
Perhaps there are more cats.
Yeah, I think... I'm not sure.
Turkeys. Wild turkeys.
So is that a yes?
I'm not sure.
It seems perhaps that there is indecision. But this is the way that the universe will flow. From time to time, there is not an answer. There is only a question and the resonance that we feel as it is asked.
I think a lot of it is a willingness. There is a willingness to try, to not be afraid. Also to listen to what is there in the world, and also what we are telling ourselves, which is also easy to put aside.
And this again, I think, comes back to the block between the self and the self, which we discussed earlier. I think this facet of communication, which we may block ourselves from our own desires.
Absolutely, absolutely. The possibility of self-blocking is real.
Are you offering a suggestion
on how to cure a self-block?
Yes.
No, it is a matter, I think, of self-reflection, sincerity, and sincerity, I think, is especially important. Too many desires, too many distractions will prevent one from simply being at peace alone.
Yes, I think that if I were to advocate, it may come across as quite general, but I think that what you should do is to meditate, perhaps in some fashion that you like, on the things which you want and the things which you would like to expel from your current situation. And if there is some form of practice which you prefer for the meditation, then I think it is up to you to pick which is right for you. And perhaps I should say that the exercise is to discover that which you prefer.
Well, in any case, our general advice notwithstanding, callers, unfortunately, we have run out of time.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Caller 9 maybe already has left. Thanks to both callers, and thanks to the many callers that called that we were unable to get to. Zorro.
Thank you, Doctor, and of course, thank you to all the listeners out there as well.
I'm Dr. Jaris Sakran here on Music for Human, New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. Here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Terra Voice. Ma'a salama.
Safety.
Number 1.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number 2.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number 3.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number 4.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
The views and opinions presented on this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT.